We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's Peril at End House.
You know, Poirot, I don't think there's anywhere on the south coast as attractive as St. Lou. No wonder they call it the Queen of Watering Places. It's just like being on the Riviera. Mind you, I always think that Cornwall is every bit as fascinating as the south of France.
Yes, so it said on our menu in the restaurant car yesterday, Hastings.
Oh, did it?
It is hardly a very original observation.
We were sitting on one of the terraces of the Majestic Hotel. Below us lay the gardens, looking almost tropical with their palm trees. The sea was a deep and lovely blue, and the sun was shining with all the single-hearted fervour an August sun should, but in England so rarely does. Only the speedboats roaring across the bay and the buzzing of the marauding wasps disturbed a scene of perfect peace.
Tell me, Hastings, is there anything of interest in your paper?
Well, nothing much to speak of. Trouble of some sort in China, a swindle in the city, and an outbreak of parrot disease.
How very curious.
Still no news of Captain Seaton.
Well, the man who was flying around the world in that, how is he called?
A seaplane.
No. There is another word.
An amphibian.
That is it.
The albatross. That's what his plane is called. Too bad if the fellow's gone west. But he could always have come down by one of the more remote Pacific islands.
Let us trust not one inhabited by cannibals.
He must be a pretty plucky chap. That sort of courage makes one feel it's a great thing to be an Englishman.
Hmm. It consoles for the defeats at Wimbledon.
Oh, I didn't
no,
mean...
No, me, I am not an amphibian like the machine of the unfortunate Captain Seaton. I prefer to live in one element, the earth, which is good enough for me.
Are you never tempted to renew your detective activities, this passive life?
Suits me admirably. To sit in the sun, what could be more charming? To step from your pedestal at the zenith of your fame, what could be a grander gesture? To hear people say, that is Hercule Poirot. Mm-hmm. There never was anyone like him. There never will be. I am satisfied. I ask no more. Hercule Poirot has solved his last case.
Aren't you afraid of tempting the gods?
Impossible, mon ami, that anything should shake the will of Hercule Poirot.
Impossible, Poirot?
Ah, you're right, my friend. One should not use such a word. I do not say that if a bullet should strike the wall by my head, I should not investigate the matter. One is human after all.
What was that?
Only a pebble, mon ami. Yes. One is human, one is the sleeping dog, but the sleeping dog can be roused. Let us descend into the garden.
He set off ahead of me down the steps, which led from the terrace to the rose garden, and as he did so, a girl came hurrying up towards us.
Oh!
What about Poirot? Are you all right?
It is my ankle.
Let me help you up.
Here, Poirot, take my arm.
Oh, a thousand pardons.
Just take it slowly.
Oh, mademoiselle, you are most kind. I regret exceedingly that. My foot, he pains me considerably.
Can you stand on it?
It is the turned ankle, that is all. In a few minutes, all will be well, but if you could help me over to that chair, Hastings.
Of course.
You and mademoiselle between you, if she will be so very kind.
Just hold on to me.
There you are.
Thank you.
I think I'd better go and get a doctor.
No. That is not necessary. The ankle turned, that is all. But in a little minute, it will have been forgotten. Mademoiselle, I thank you a thousand times. Please, sit down, I beg you.
I really think you ought to get it seen to.
Oh, mademoiselle, I assure you, it is a bagatelle. In the pleasure of your society, the pain passes already.
I'm very flattered.
It was very fortunate that you happened to be passing, mademoiselle. You are staying at the hotel?
Oh, no. I'm meeting some friends in the lounge for cocktails. I live at End House.
End House?
Over there. Out on the point.
Rather an eerie-looking place.
Like something out of Edgar Poe. The House of Usher, perhaps.
Anyway, I love it. But the place is going to rack and ruin.
You are the last of an old family, mademoiselle?
Oh, we're nothing very important. But there have been Buckleys there for 200 or 300 years. My brother died 3 years ago, so I'm the last of the family.
Oh, that is sad. You live there alone?
I wouldn't really put it like that. I'm away a good deal, and when I'm home, there's usually a cheery mob coming and going.
That is so modern. I was picturing you in a dark, mysterious mansion haunted by a family curse.
What a picturesque imagination you have. The house isn't haunted. Or if it is, the ghost must be a very kind, protective one. I've had 3 escapes from sudden death in as many days, so I must bear a charmed life.
Escapes from death?
How very interesting.
Oh, they weren't very exciting. Just accidents. Damn these wasps. There must be a nest of them somewhere.
You have been stung, yes?
No, but I hate it when they come right past your face. One of them just missed me only a few minutes ago. Seem to be all over the place today.
The bee in the bonnet, perhaps. And that is a particularly elegant hat you are wearing.
Oh, do you think so?
No, I did not mean you to take it off.
Her dark hair was ruffled and gave her an elfin look. In fact, there was something elfin about her altogether. The small, vivid face, the enormous dark blue eyes, something haunting and arresting. Was it a hint of recklessness? And there were dark shadows under her eyes.
And now I really must be going. They'll be wondering where I've got to.
Nick! Nick!
What did I tell you?
So that's where you've been hiding. Fred is absolutely desperate for a drink.
I was just coming. This is Commander Challenger.
Of the British Navy, I presume. Oh, I have a great regard for the British Navy.
Really?
Come on, George. Let's go and join Freddie and Jim. I hope the ankle will be all right, monsieur. Goodbye.
Yes. I am sure it will. Goodbye, mademoiselle.
Goodbye, Miss Buckley.
So, that is one of mademoiselle's friends, one of her cheery crowd. Oh, but she has left her hat behind. Has the commander a tendresse for her, do you think?
My dear Poirot, how can I possibly tell? Give me that hat, I'll take it to her.
Not yet, no. Some amusement.
Really, Poirot?
I grow old and childish, but I am not so completely imbecile as you think. We will return the hat later to End House and thus gain another opportunity of meeting the charming Miss Nick.
Poirot, I believe you've fallen in love.
She is a pretty girl, is she not?
Why are you so interested in her?
No, you are under a misapprehension, my friend. I may be interested in the lady, it is true, but I am much more interested in her hat.
In her hat?
You see the reason for my interest?
Perfectly plain, fawn felt, with a wide brim.
No, I did not ask you to describe the hat. Regard more closely, my dear old imbecile. It is not necessary to use the little grey cells. The eyes will do.
Oh, I see what you mean. There's a hole in the brim.
Did you observe the way mademoiselle flinched when that creature flew past? The bee in the bonnet, the hole in the brim.
But a wasp couldn't make a hole like that.
Oh, what acumen. No, Hastings, it could not. But a bullet could.
A bullet?
May we? A bullet like this one.
Where did you get hold of that?
A spent bullet. It was that which fell at our feet when we were talking together on the terrace.
And I thought it was just a pebble. Was that why you went through that pantomime about twisting your ankle?
Ah-ha-ha, you see at last. I wish to make the acquaintance of Mademoiselle Nick because I believe that it was at her that the bullet was fired. 1 inch of a difference, and the hole would not have been through the hat, but through the head.
Good Lord!
But he made a grave mistake, that would-be murderer, when he shot at his victim within a dozen yards of Hercule Poirot. And what was it that Mademoiselle herself said?
That she'd had 3 escapes from sudden death in as many days.
Exactly, my friend. And now there has been a fourth. The peril is very close at hand.
Poirot, I've been thinking.
An admirable exercise, mon ami. Continue it.
That shot must have been fired quite close to us. And yet the funny thing is that we didn't hear it. The thing is rather odd.
No, it is not at all odd. All this morning, speedboats have been making trips round the bay. Ma foi, you could fire a machine gun almost and never notice it when one of those abominations goes pop, pop, popping out to sea. Ah, and here comes Mademoiselle Nick and more of her cheery crowd. Evidently, they are going to take lunch here. And therefore, when a suitable opportunity presents itself, I must return the hat.
For the remainder of our meal, my friend was silent and unusually distant, keeping his eye entirely on Miss Buckley and her friends. Challenger was sitting next to her, and there was a tall, fair, rather exquisite young man with a supercilious manner and a tired drawl. The woman sitting beside him was an unusual type. A weary Madonna describes her best. Her face was dead white and emaciated, yet curiously attractive. Her eyes were light grey with very large pupils.
Making that point at all.
At the end of the meal, the two men left to inspect a very ostentatious, gleaming red car, which belonged to the languid young man, and the two women went to take coffee in the lounge.
Now is our opportunity to have a little word with Mademoiselle Nick. I will see if I can arrange a meeting at End House where we can be away from the rest of them.
He marched into the lounge with an almost military determination and drew Miss Buckley to one side.
Mademoiselle, may I crave one little word with you?
I was left feeling rather ill at ease, not knowing whether to strike up a conversation with Miss Buckley's companion or not. She was staring at me with a look of curious detachment.
Oh, why don't you sit down until your friend has finished with Nick?
Thank you. Miss Buckley very kindly came to the rescue of my friend when he twisted his ankle this morning.
So Nick told me. There doesn't seem to be much wrong with his ankle now, does there?
Just a momentary sprain.
Well, at least I'm glad to hear that Nick didn't invent the whole thing. She's the most heaven-sent little liar that ever existed, you know.
Is that so?
She's one of my oldest friends, but I always think loyalty's a tiresome virtue, don't you? Nick told us all a marvellous story about something going wrong with the brakes of her car. But Jim Lazarus, he was with us just now, said there was nothing in it at all. And he's by way of being quite expert about cars.
Fortunately, I was spared any further embarrassing disclosures about her friend by the return of Poirot, who gave a quick bow to the listless Madonna and drew me hastily away to the privacy of his sitting room.
It is all arranged, my friend. We are to call on Mademoiselle at End House at 6:30.
How did you manage it?
Well, she was a little unwilling, naturally. I could see the thoughts passing through her mind. Who is he, this little man? Is he the bounder? The moving picture director? If she could have refused, she would. But it is difficult. Asked like that on the spur of the moment, it is easier to consent.
It still seems perfectly incredible to me to take a pot shot at somebody in a hotel garden. Only a madman would do such a thing.
I disagree with you. Given one condition, it would be quite a reasonably safe affair. To begin with, the garden is deserted and there is plenty of cover. Trees, palms, flowering shrubs. Anyone could hide and be unobserved while waiting for Mademoiselle to come that way.
But how could he be certain that she would?
Because Mademoiselle Nick is one of those people who is always late and she would take the shortcut. The way through the hotel garden is the most direct route from End House.
But all the same, the risk was enormous. He might have been seen, and you can't make the shooting seem like an accident.
Not like an accident, no.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing. A little idea. Leaving it aside for the moment, there is, as I said just now, the essential condition.
And what is that?
Surely you can't tell me, Hastings.
I wouldn't like to deprive you of the pleasure of being clever at my expense.
Oh, the sarcasm, the irony. Well, my friend, what leaps to the eye is this. The motive for the attempt to kill Mademoiselle Nick cannot be obvious. If it were, then, as you say, the risk would be too great. People would be bound to say, I wonder where so-and-so was when the shot was fired. No, The identity of our would-be killer cannot be obvious. That is what disturbs me. I want to find out about these so-called accidents that Mademoiselle dismisses so lightly.
From the outside, End House was very large and very dreary-looking and was clearly in a bad state of repair.
Now, how about a cocktail?
Oh, yes.
I'm told it's one of the few things I do really well.
The inside of the house could not have been a greater contrast. The drawing room was full of sunshine and the light of the sea. The curtains were of faded brocade, but the covers were new and gay, and the cushions were positively hectic.
I'm simply devoured with curiosity. Am I the long-lost heroine you've been seeking for your next film? Well, you were so solemn at lunchtime. I feel it can't be anything else. Here, try this.
Thank you.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
Excellent.
Well.
To your good health, mademoiselle. To your continued good health.
Is there something the matter?
Yes, mademoiselle. This. You know what it is?
Yes, of course I do. It's a bullet.
It was not a wasp that flew past your face in the garden this morning. It was this bullet.
Oh, you mean that some idiot was firing off bullets in the hotel garden?
It would seem so.
But I never heard a gun go off.
I want to know about these other so-called accidents that you mentioned. I want to be sure that that was what they were.
But what else could they be?
And leave me to be the judge of that, mademoiselle.
What if someone is attempting your life?
Oh, but who on earth would want to kill me? I'm not the beautiful young heiress. I only wish I were worth killing. But I'm afraid there isn't a hope.
Will you tell me about these accidents, mademoiselle?
Of course. But there's really nothing to it. I'm sorry I even mentioned them. There's a heavy picture that hangs over my bed. It fell down in the night. As luck would have it, I happened to hear a door banging somewhere in the house, and I went down to shut it. Otherwise, it would probably have bashed my head in.
And what about accident number two?
Oh, that's even more feeble. There's a scrambly cliff path down to the sea, which I use most days when I go to bathe. A boulder got dislodged somehow and came roaring down, just missing me. It gave me the fright of my life.
I'm sure it must have done.
The third thing was quite different. Something went wrong with the brakes of my car. I don't quite know what. The garage man did explain, but I couldn't really follow it. If I'd gone down the hill towards the town, there would have been a devil of a smash. But owing to my always leaving something behind, I turned back and only ran into the laurel hedge.
And you can't say what the actual trouble was?
If you really want to know, you can ask them at Mott's garage. I think what it boiled down to was that something had come loose or been unscrewed.
Where do you keep your car, mademoiselle?
In the shed, round the other side of the house.
So anyone could tamper with the car without being noticed?
Well, yes, I suppose so. Oh, but it's so silly.
No, mademoiselle, she's not silly. I tell you, you are in grave danger. Do you know who I am?
I'm afraid I don't. Should I?
I am Hercule Poirot.
Oh, yes.
You are not at ease. That means, I suppose, that you have not read my books.
Well, no. Not all of them, but I know the name, of course.
Mademoiselle, you are a polite little liar. I forgot. You are only a child. You would not have heard. So quickly does fame pass. My friend will tell you.
Monsieur Poirot was a great detective.
Oh, is that all you can find to say? Tell mademoiselle that I am a detective unsurpassed, the greatest that ever lived.
Well, that's no longer necessary. You've told her yourself.
Ah, yes, but one should not have to sing one's own praises.
There's no point in keeping a dog and having to bark oneself. Who is the dog, by the way?
My name's Hastings.
Oh, 1066 and all that. Oh, but seriously, it's very kind of you and all that. But it's nothing more than a series of silly accidents.
You are as obstinate as the devil.
Well, that's where I get my name from. My grandfather was supposed to have sold his soul to the devil. Everyone round here called him Old Nick. Oh, he was a wicked old man, but great fun. I adored him. I went everywhere with him. And so they called us Old Nick and Young Nick. My real name is Magdala.
What a very unusual name.
Yes, it's a kind of family one. There have been lots of Magdalas in the Buckley family. There's one on the wall over there.
Oh, And very beautiful she is, too.
And the portrait over the mantelpiece, is that your grandfather, mademoiselle?
Yes, that's old Nick. Quite striking, isn't it? Well, Jimmy Lazarus wanted to buy it. He offered me £50 for it, but I wouldn't sell. I've got a great affection for old Nick. There was a saying round here that everything he touched turned to gold. But he was a gambler and soon ran through it all. When he died, he left hardly anything beside the house and the land.
Listen to me, mademoiselle, and I implore you to be serious. Your life is in great danger. Today somebody shot at you with a Mauser pistol.
A Mauser?
Yes. Why do you ask? Do you know of anyone who has a Mauser pistol?
I've got one myself.
You have?
Yes, it was my father's. He brought it back from the war, and it's been knocking around the house ever since. I saw it only the other day in the drawer of the bureau.
Perhaps you should check that it is still there.
Anything to keep the great detective happy. That's funny. I could have sworn I saw it in here. I must have dreamt it. No, it's not here. I expect it's somewhere around.
You remember, Hastings, that I told you I had a little idea? Well, it was correct. Supposing Mademoiselle had been found shot, lying in the hotel garden, and beside her hand, just fallen from it, would have been found her own pistol. There would be suggestions, no doubt, of worry, of sleeplessness.
Well, that's true enough. Everybody's been telling me I've been looking nervy lately.
They would have brought in a verdict of suicide. Mademoiselle's fingerprints on the pistol and nobody else's.
Oh, terribly amusing.
N'est-ce pas? But you understand, mademoiselle, there must be no more of this. Four accidents, yes, but the fifth time may be different.
Bring out your rubber-tired hearses.
But we are here, my friend and I, to prevent all that.
Yes, we'll look after you, Miss Buckley.
Oh, how frightfully nice of you.
And so it is time for me to begin to act as the conventional detective and to ask the conventional questions. Who profits by your death, mademoiselle?
Oh, I can't imagine. That's why it all seems such nonsense. All I have in the world is this beastly old barn of a house, and it's mortgaged up to the hilt. The roof leaks, and there can't be a diamond mine or anything exciting like that hidden in the cliff.
It is mortgaged, you say?
Yes. I had no alternative. You see, there were two lots of death duties on top of one another. First, my grandfather died, just 6 years ago, and then my brother. That just about put the lid on the financial position.
And your father?
He was invalided home from the war, then got pneumonia and died in 1919.
And after you, mademoiselle, who is your nearest relative?
My cousin, Charles Weiss. He's a solicitor in St. Lou. Quite good and worthy, but very dull.
Does he manage your affairs for you?
I suppose you could say that, not that I really any to manage. He fixed up the mortgage for me and made me let the lodge.
The lodge? And to whom is it let?
To some Australians. Croft, their name is. Too terribly friendly for words. Always bringing me sticks of celery and peas and that sort of thing. Mrs. Croft's a cripple and lies on the sofa all day. But they pay the rent, and that's what matters.
And now for your friends, mademoiselle. The ones with whom you are lunching today, for instance.
Well, Freddie Rice, Frederica, is practically my greatest friend. Oh, she's had a rotten life. Married to the most frightful beast. Drink and drugs and all that. She left him a couple of years ago. Since then, she's just drifted about. Oh, I wish to goodness she'd marry Jimmy Lazarus.
Is that the art dealer in Bond Street?
Yes. Jim's the only son. Rolling in money. He's devoted to Freddie and they go everywhere together.
And where is Mrs. Rice's husband?
Oh, God knows. He's dropped out of everything. It makes it horribly awkward for Freddie. You can't divorce a man when you don't know where he is.
And what about the good Commander Challenger?
I've known George for about 5 years. It seems like all my life. He's a good soul, George.
He wants you to marry him, hmm?
He does mention it now and again in the small hours of the morning or after the second glass of port.
But you won't accept him.
What would be the use of George and I marrying one another? We've neither of us got a bean. And he must be 40 if he's a day.
In fact, he has one foot in the grave. And you are young and beautiful, mademoiselle, and the sun shines, and there is life and love ahead of you, and I am determined that you shall live to enjoy them. Tell me, have you a friend you can trust?
Well, there's Freddy.
No, other than Mrs. Rice.
Why do you want to know?
Because I want you to have a friend to stay with you. Immediately.
Well, there's Maggie, I suppose. I could get hold of her, I expect.
Who's Maggie?
Maggie Buckley, one of my Yorkshire cousins. I usually have her to stay here sometime or other in the summer. Oh, she's not much fun, though. Her father's a clergyman. And she's one of those painfully pure girls, with the kind of hair that has just become fashionable by accident.
She will do admirably.
I certainly don't know who else I could get hold of at this time of year. But if it isn't the choir boys' outing or the mother's bean feast, she'll come all right. I'll wire her to come on Monday.
Why not tomorrow?
On Sunday trains and all the way from Yorkshire. She'll think I'm dying if I suggest that. No, I'll say Monday.
Very well. Now tell me, mademoiselle, have you ever made a will?
Yes, about 6 months ago, before my op.
Qu'est-ce que vous dites? Your op?
My appendix operation.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
Someone said I ought to make a will, so I did.
And what were the terms of the will?
I left Endhouse to Charles Vice. Mm-hmm. I hadn't much else to leave, but what there was I bequeathed to Freddy.
To Mrs. Rice?
Yes. Hmm. I have a nasty feeling that the liabilities would probably exceed the assets.
So, now we will take our leave. But I must warn you to be careful.
Of what?
Yes, you are right. In which direction to be careful? But do not fear, mademoiselle. In a little while I shall have discovered the truth.
And until then I should beware of bombs and boulders, falling pictures and arrows dipped in the secret poison of South American Indians.
You make a joke of everything, do you not? But four attempts on your life is no laughing matter. Murder is not to be mocked, mademoiselle.
In part one of Agatha Christie's Peril at End House, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Captain Hastings by Simon Williams. Nick Buckley, Gemma Saunders, Frederica Rice, Susanna Hamilton, George Challenger, Andrew Wincott. Peril at End House is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.